Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It is time for Movies and Booze. We're joined in the studio by Chris Wasser, Gene Smullen, and taking time out from watching the Kylie documentary on repeat, Serena Bellissimo.
Have you been spying on me?
Yeah. Well, like, your Instagram is just basically your Serena, or your Kylie-gram now at this stage.
It's good, isn't it?
It's not just me.
It is good.
It's so, so good. And even
very
people,
moving.
Like, yeah, did you cry?
Oh, yeah.
Have you not watched it at all?
No, I'm saving it for
the weekend?
When they book me into a home.
Oh, sure.
Wow.
And I'm infirm. I'm waiting for then. It'll help me, you know.
Did you never like Kylie?
I've nothing against her. Yeah.
And there's nothing that, like, okay, what about her time with Michael Hutchence? Would you be intrigued to find out a bit about that?
Yeah, I know that. I was tempted to make a hugely tasteless joke there, which I won't. Why would it have been fascinating?
Oh, it was just lovely to, because, like, she shared intimate, well, not that type of intimate moments, but there were intimate moments about her and Michael.
Yeah, that's true. The Nick Cave stuff is good.
The Nick Cave stuff is fantastic.
He's a talking head in it and.
You would never think that the two of them, they're so different from such different worlds. And then they did that duet together, Where the Wild Roses Grow. And he's the one that actually encouraged her to embrace her pop.
Yeah.
And from that moment, she was just like, this is who I'm meant to be. And her star sort of went on the rise again. And he, like, they're actually really good friends, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wouldn't put the two of them together. It is weird how he was like, listen, Kylie, you need to go off and write a banger.
Yeah.
She comes
indie.
Back. Yeah.
Why, what was she doing before she did the duet with Nick Cave? Was she going down a, you know, she was going the indie pop route?
Yeah, she signed to this, like, European label called Deconstructed, and they were the guys who wanted to push this whole Kylie as a serious artist thing. Because she was criticised for never writing her own music. It was always like, she's
being
just
the singing budgie.
Yeah, she's the singing budgie, they used to call her, and she's just the face of the Stock Aitken Waterman movement, you know. She's as disposable as anyone else in that catalogue. So that was her attempt to be serious. But Nick Cave says at one point, no one willingly sets out to be taken seriously. No one willingly sets out to be an independent, you know, indie artist.
And if you do, you're going to get the opposite result.
You're a pop star. Embrace that.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
But it is fabulous. And I'll talk about it for as long as you let me talk about it.
Right, so the two movies, Power Ballad.
Yep.
Is John, like, and this is no shade on John Carney, but like, he's very good at making this sort of film. Is he telling the same story over and over again in a way?
Variations of the same thing. I mean, a pal and colleague of mine, Hilary White, recently said, oh, John Carney's made his film again, but it's a good one.
Yeah.
And that's always been the case with him. You know, Begin Again, the same film, great. Flora and Son, underappreciated, but still very good. I think he's become the go-to guy for these very sweet, sentimental, urban musicals.
Yeah.
I mean, that's his, like, when the first time I ever spoke to him, he did describe it as a peculiar accidental brand that he'd fallen into after making Once. But I think the brand, it's, you know, that's his wheelhouse. That's the thing that he is very good at. So I want to see him continue making films like this. This one is slightly different in that it's about a guy who is cheated out of, you know, he was supposed to, Paul Rudd's character, he was supposed to be this big rock star. That was his dream. And it didn't work out for him, and then to make matters worse, the one great song that he has under his belt is actually stolen by this smarmy pop star from America.
Oh, right.
So that's one of the films we're looking at.
And 500 Miles.
500 Miles, it is.
It's a road movie?
it's not that. But it's Bill Nighy comes to Ireland to make a children's sort of adventure film. It's about a couple of lads who live in Sheffield who think that their mom and dad are going to split up. So, in order to save their marriage and to kind of hang on to each other, they visit their granddad in Dingle. And the journey is about 500 miles, give or take. And so, yeah, we follow the Youngfellas trying to find Bill Nighy in Ireland.
Yeah, because the book, because it's based on a book, but the book
is, we're going to get
into that, are we? No, but the book is called 473 Miles or something.
They did, so, but you know what?
They had to reroute it for the movie version.
It doesn't look good on a billboard.
Probably not,
Doesn't, you know. The song would have been very different had it been 420 miles.
420 miles, and there's a delay on the M50. So, Jean, what wines are we? You're going to be optimistic about the weather.
I am believing Serena was just saying to me, where is summer? It is coming. Definitely. It's definitely this weekend. We're going to get a week of absolute. Everybody will be out in the garden with the barbecues fired up. So I've picked two wines that will go perfectly. We have a Verdejo from Spain and a Shiraz from South Africa.
If it lashes rain.
The complaints we get. It's not.
Yeah. You feel it in your waters.
I do. Yeah. I do.
I don't know. I'm not sure if like Meta and her are just liars or they can't keep up with us. It's
do
just changing
think
so
just
much.
I just think we just need to give everyone a little bit of hope.
And yeah, like, that's true.
Aim for the weekend. This week's been really crappy, but we'll have sun on the weekend. And if we don't, well, there's always next weekend.
So Emily in Paris, next season is, finished. Now, is there a big storyline that has to be wrapped up?
No, not really.
Yeah, okay.
I think
her visa runs out.
Exactly, and she's due back. I think even, not that they've said this, but I'm assuming that even the creators are surprised that Emily in Paris has run for as long as it has. They're filming season 6 at the moment. And of course, like in last season, it was Emily in Rome for a little bit. And now she's doing Emily in Greece for a little bit, as well as Monaco and Paris. But I think with this series, what helped it was when it first started, it was during COVID times. And it was such, it's Darren Star, who has done stuff like Melrose Place. And he came under Aaron Spelling, who did Beverly Hills 90210, all those schmaltzy type shows. So I think it was a bit of escapism during COVID, but what helped as well was there was beautiful escapism. You were in Paris.
Yeah.
You had the fashion. Like, the writing isn't fantastic on this. The storylines aren't great. But I keep coming back for more because they keep taking me to Rome. They take me, next is Greece. As I said, we're going to Monaco. So, but Lily Collins, who stars as Emily Cooper, came out. She put out a video that said, after 6 unforgettable years of playing Emily Cooper, I'm here to share that the upcoming season will be our final. And season 6 will bring you everything you love about the show and serve as the final chapter in Emily's adventure of a lifetime. So I'd say a lot more fabulous things to look at.
Okay, so it's just more torn around. Or maybe she'll go back to Paris. Or is she in Paris in every season and then she goes on her holidays to Italy or
that
kind of thing?
Well, then, with Italy, what happened? Do you really want me to get into the intricacies? What happened with Italy was that she went and worked she fell in love with someone and then she ended up trying to work in Rome as trying to open another arm of the branch of the agency. That didn't really work, so she's ended up back in Paris. And now, I don't know why she's in Greece. Is it because she's on holiday? Is it because it just looks great on screen? But she will end up at some stage in Paris and Monaco.
Did she learn a word of French in the entire time she's there?
She does.
Okay, good.
There, yeah. And she learnt a little bit of Italian, so I'm going to be interested to see.
Okay,
will she be
good.
Learning some Greek as well while she's
right.
there?
Right.
Bonjour and ciao. And
yeah.
That's about
and
it.
And
I would speak in this accent and you were like, right. So more controversially, I suppose, and people didn't know how the Michael movie was going to do, and it has done very well, it should be said. So are they going to... They are going to make another one, it seems.
I know I shouldn't be shocked, but I am shocked that they're making another one because, look, this has grossed, I think they're saying it's set to go over $1 billion at the box office. So the first time that this has happened for Lionsgate. So when you make that much money, it's very hard to turn around and go, actually, we have so many other songs that didn't feature. And they're saying, you know, there were so many other moments of Michael's life that they could talk about, even during that period that we saw. Like they could, they're like, we could go back in time. We could even pick out parts of that period that we didn't actually show. So there's so many stories we can tell. They said they've got about 25 to 30% of a second movie already shot because of the amount of stuff they shot for the first movie.
Okay.
So are they working, are they going to try and work that stuff in? I just think that if they go for a second movie, they've got to be really careful because it can't be...
Another whitewash.
Yeah, well, if they're doing Michael's later life, they're going to have to touch on stuff that isn't as joyful as they showed us in the first one. So I don't know, but look, money talks. So, yeah, it looks like Lionsgate are really seriously considering making a second.
From what I understand, the plot of the first one, they're like the Jeopardy in the movie, you know, what he had to overcome was pretty flimsy. He was in a world famous group and then he became a world famous solo artist.
Yeah.
In a sequel, what's the difficulty there? If they don't address the elephant in the room.
I don't think they can legally anyway.
Yeah, they can.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about you know, when they did release Michael, before they released it, they had filmed stuff about the allegations, but they had to pull it out because of legal reasons.
Well, I mean, I think there was one person who didn't want to be mentioned, but that, like, there's loads of ways they could have, because there was more than one allegation anyway.
But when there was a settlement with Jordan Chandler's family, there was something in the contract that said that this cannot be dramatized in a film and people can't be named, but they completely missed that when they were shooting the original script. So there is footage from that 1993 case, like the beginning of the film was supposed to be Michael Jackson standing, looking at himself, looking at, you know, the man in the mirror, and you can hear police sirens coming towards the house, and then it kind of takes us back to the 1960s, Gary, Indiana, and it would deal with the, you know, that case later on. So all of that footage has already been shot. You had the lawyers coming in far too late and saying, "Oh no, we found something. We can't actually include this." So I don't know how they make a second film, a sequel, without addressing that, but they're not allowed to. It's weird.
But see, they've already set us up for anyone who's saying, why aren't you doing that stuff in the sequel? They've already set us up by saying, but look, we may actually talk about stuff that we didn't talk about during that period that we showed you in the first movie, or we may even go back to Gary, Indiana. Yeah. So I don't think they even know. I think they're just hoping that they could just get more music. Is it just going to be another music piece?
Yeah.
Because that's what this was. It was just a music film.
We shall see. Tell us about our first wine, Jean.
Okay. Sorry. Cough as soon as I come up.
Yeah, there you go.
Now.
That's some sticking your head in the Barbie.
That's all to do, So this is the 2025 Hoya de Carmen Verdejo. Now, this is from La Mancha, and that's Don Quixote country, as you know. La Mancha is, in Spain, it's the source of an awful lot of very good value wine. There's a sort of bit of useless information. The most widely planted white grape in the world is a white grape called Arion. And there's so much of it planted in the La Mancha region. Well, it used to be, may have changed now, because that's the grape they used to make all the Spanish brandy from, when the Spanish brandy industry was absolutely huge. I imagine things have changed since then. But nowadays, an awful lot of producers are buying grapes from La Mancha, because it's a very dry, arid place. So it's warm climate. Now, Verdejo originally comes from Rueda, and it's one of the key white grapes in the Rueda region, which is much further north, very high altitude, so it's cool climate. So what you have here is Verdejo that's actually grown in a very warm part of Spain. This is exclusive to Dunn Stores. It's brand new to the market. It's got a flamenco dancer on the label, so
it's not difficult to spot.
You can't miss it. It's organic. It's vegan. So the thing about Verdejo is it's quite an aromatic grape, and it kind of has this herby fennel kind of characteristic to it. So. And when you taste it, you can certainly get that sort of slightly herbaceous, slightly bitter touch to it. Now, this isn't acidic. This is not a fresh acidic wine, but it's got a bit of body and a bit of structure. And you do get that slightly bitter, herby thing at the finish. But, you know, I mean, if you're looking for something that's going to chill it down, serve it with, it'll go with fish, it'll go with anything, barbecue chicken, whatever you're going to barbecue when the weather breaks and we get this heat wave that's coming this weekend.
Which Gene Smullen personally guarantees is going to happen this weekend. What movie would you do? Power Ballad first?
Oh, we'll do Power Ballad first.
Okay, Power Ballad coming up after this.
Well?
It's lovely. Why are we listening to it?
You don't recognize it?
Should I?
Yeah, of course, yes, you should. That's my chorus and verse. Are you serious?
You wrote that.
I've sung it for you. You don't remember?
When?
It would have been...
Well, I don't remember that.
A lot of music gets played around here. You couldn't remember the half of it.
Look at that. It's already up to 2 million views. Thing just came out yesterday. I like what he did with it. It's pretty good.
Are you going to be rich?
That was Power Ballad. It's in cinemas today week. That's Friday, May the 29th. Who did we hear talking in that?
We heard Paul Rudd talking as Rick, and Marcella Plunkett as his wife, Rachel, and their teenage daughter.
Okay, so is it kind of in between Dublin and LA?
Yeah. So Paul Rudd is playing a guy named Rick, who is this optimistic American who somehow wound up in pessimistic Ireland. He was in a rock band that was supposed to take over the world. He was going to have like diamond selling albums, sell out Madison Square Garden, but Instead, he met the love of his life, who was from Dublin, and he decided to come back here, buy a house in Crumlin, and start a family. So when we meet Rick, he is in a wedding band. Still makes music for a living, but, you know, playing someone else's music. He's in a wedding band called, wait for it, The Bride and Groove, which I think is actually okay. a fabulous
That's pretty
market.
Good. Yeah.
It is, yeah. And they are quite
but
good.
But they're not doing many same-sex weddings, I imagine.
No, they're a funny yeah. wedding band. They just need to get out of their own way, basically. Yeah. And what I mean by that is Rick keeps playing original songs at their gigs. And they're good original songs. So they're co-written again by John Carney and Gary Clark, formerly of Danny Wilson.
Yes, and then one of the characters is called Danny Wilson.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is also, and Danny Wilson named the band after a film called Meet Danny Wilson, that's, which was the name of their first album.
That's
it's all
it, yeah,
very
yeah,
meta.
Yeah, it's all yeah. It's just yeah. the films are eating themselves at this yeah. point. So Rick is basically stuck playing weddings, and one wedding is just outside Dublin in this swanky castle, and it's a huge wedding, and a friend of the groom is this famous pop star, as I say, Danny Wilson. He's played by one of the Jonas Brothers, Nick Jonas. And he gets up and performs a duet. You know, everyone requests for, you know, Danny Wilson has to sing with the wedding band. And Rick is not too happy about this because it's supposed to be his stage. But the two of them actually have this great connection on stage. And afterwards, they spend the whole night back in the hotel just, you know, swapping rock and roll war stories. Here's a guy who made it in a boy band but wants to be taken seriously. And here's a guy who never got the chance and just wants, you know, one little shot again. And they swap songs as well. They jam it out. At one point, Rick plays this song that you might have heard in the background there, how to write a song without you, which is gorgeous. And even Danny Wilson said, that's so good. And they kind of think nothing of it. They think, you know, we might get back to some point. Their paths might cross. 6 months later, Rick is in Lifestyle Sports in Dundrum, you know, Paul Rudd in Dundrum, buying sneakers. And he hears the song coming out over the speakers and thinks, what the hell? So, you know, you have this case where Danny, who is desperate, you know, for credibility at whatever cost, has stolen this tune and claimed full credit for it, and it becomes Ooh. And it doesn't just become, you know, number one in the charts for 1 week. It's a global smash, the biggest hit of anyone's career ever.
Yeah.
And you get the feeling as well that his manager, played by Jack Rayner, but Jack Rayner doing an American accent back in Los Angeles, he knows that his boy didn't write that song. So he's fending off phone calls from Rick, because poor Rick has no evidence that he wrote it. His family can't remember him singing it around the house. His band think he's losing the plot. He hires a lawyer and they say, sorry, Paul, you've got no case here. So you have a case where his life is just crumbling, because he just, I wrote this song, I did something so special with my life, and I'm not getting credit for it. And that's the basic setup.
Okay, right. And presumably he tries to kind of fix this. That actually, for a John Carney movie, that sounds a bit more conflicty than usual.
Yeah. And there's kind of less like breaks for songs, because, you know, with Sing Street, you know, you kept stopping every now and then so that, you know, the young band could write another hit. In Florent and Son, you had Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Eve Ewson over the laptop kind of performing together. There are less songs, but when they do actually come up, they're memorable. I think always the mark of a good musical, and this is very much, it's an urban musical. It absolutely is. And I think the mark of a good one is when you leave the cinema and, you know, I think it was maybe 3 or 4 days later, I was singing How to Write a Song Without You. And I thought, that's actually a pretty good tune. Like, that could actually make a splash here in award season. Is it one of Carney's best films? I don't believe so. But I, as I said, he keeps kind of doing variations of the same thing, but he's very, very good at it. It's a little bit bumpy along the way. It's a little bit, you know, there's a staginess that's kind of started to creep into his work a little too much. I'd watch that. You could notice it a little bit in Florent and Son. It's not quite as accomplished a film as, say, Sing Street, which for my money was just perfect.
So
it's not quite there. You know, some of the jokes don't really land. You also have Carney collaborating with Peter MacDonald this time, who also acts. So he co-wrote the screenplay with them, and he plays the guitarist. Do you remember The Stag years ago? Do you remember the guy that they were all afraid of, the legend? What was he called? The Machine?
Yes,
yeah,
right.
That's Peter MacDonald. Yeah. But it always finds a way to win you back. And I thought Paul Rudd was very, very good at this guy. You believed him as a guy who just is slowly, you know, losing his mind because no one will give him credit for this. I think Nick Jonas is a little too good at playing a smarmy pop star. I don't know how far removed from reality that was. Love the fact that they did shoot it between Dublin and America. My favourite part of the film, and I don't think I've ever said this before, is the ending. It has one of the cleverest and loveliest finales to any film that I've seen this year. So much so that, and I might be completely wrong about this, I came out thinking, did Carney write the finale first and then build the film backwards? Because the ending is a knockout. It really is. So whatever about the bumps along the way, stick with it for the performances, for the songs. Great concept and fabulous ending.
Yeah. Someone's texting in to say, is the actress John Carney's wife or long-term girlfriend? Yep. She's always in his films.
Yep, Marcella Punkus. She is in... Was she in... She was in Flora and Son. I think she popped up in Sing Street too. Yeah, they met married years ago, have a couple of kids and they usually collaborate.
Okay, well, that answers that question. James in Cabra says, I saw Obsession during the week. Okay. Christ, what a brilliant film. One of the best films of the year.
It is fantastic. It is so good that I have convinced my wife that we should go see it tonight. She can't remember the last time she's watched a horror in the cinema. I don't know how our marriage is going to survive it. But I am very much looking forward to seeing it again.
Well, that's good. It's a valuable lesson to learn how to get used to being wrong. It's a good investment for a future married life. So Quinta Brunson is going to be Betty Boop.
Yes.
Is this going to be one of those things where Elon Musk blows a gasket because, you know, she's black and Betty Boop, of course, was a member of the master race.
Yes, of course. And, you know, she wasn't a cartoon character that came out in the 1930s.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't matter. This is the erosion of Western culture, etc.
Now, I don't know how much Ireland know about Quinta Brunson. I feel like Abbott Elementary has sort of gone under the radar in this country. It's a Disney, you can find it on Disney Plus. It's a fantastic comedy series. Part 2 of season 5 is dropping on Wednesday. The reason why I know that is we've literally been counting down to season 5 finally dropping on Disney Plus. And she's amazing. She actually created and writes Abbott Elementary, and she's going to do the same. So she's not only just playing Betty Boop, she's actually going to write the film as well. She's met with Max Fleischer, who is the grandson of the guy who actually created Betty Boop.
Okay.
So they're talking about this being similar to Barbie in it having a sort of it's not just about the, I don't know, everyone was just like, how are we going to turn Barbie into a movie? It's the same sort of thing, looking at repression, oppression, and also the fun parts that come with being Betty Boop. I'm actually excited. I cannot wait to see what she does with it. And she's just such, as I said, she's an amazing writer, creator, producer, all of the above, and I think she'll do a great job with this.
Is it going to be live action or is it a cartoon?
I assumed because they mentioned Barbie that it was going to be live action.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And she'll be, I think she'll be brilliant because Betty Boop as well is just like petite and I think she has all of that going on. And something's just dropped in my mind. Quinta has just recently cut her hair that has a similar hairstyle to Betty Boop.
And it does look a bit like it, yeah.
Yeah, so I wonder if she's actually started, she's getting more into far her. Along than
well,
we know.
Because it was only, Betty Boop was only like in the, it was like the dawn of talkies or maybe it was even before that. Yeah. It was the 20s and 30s. It was kind of flickery stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And then do you remember, I don't know if you're like a certain age, probably my vintage, you remember the Betty Boop song. Remember in the 80s and 90s? Yeah. I think it was 90s. No.
What's the Betty Boop song?
I'm not going to sing it for you. I do not sing it.
Well, now, during the ad break. Aoife says, I missed that horror that your guest is going to tonight. Can you say it again? Oh, my gosh. It's Obsession.
Obsession. Yeah. Yes.
And people are raving about it. And apparently it's very disturbing. 500 Miles, the film we're going to be talking about next, has a strong resemblance to the old Irish movie Flight of the Doves.
Yeah.
With Gabriel Byrne and young Dana.
Mm-hmm. Would that be? There are some flavors of slavers in that. That's actually come up in a couple of reviews, all right? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that'll be interesting. Now, I don't care who's in it. A film called Three Incestuous Sisters wins best title for a film. Hands down.
So you don't care about Mick Jagger, who I didn't realise, and I probably should. Did you know he was an actor?
Yeah. Way back when.
Yeah. Yes.
In the 70s.
And was he any good?
No.
He did do a film. It was an Australian film.
Ned Kelly.
Well, he was in it. Yeah,
he wasn't Ned Kelly, but he was in it.
Yeah, he was in it. And no, he did. I remember him doing a few films. All
but
right.
Apparently, he did something as far back as 2009, as early as 2019. Do you remember that?
No.
It's something called The Burnt Orange Hearsay. Don't know what that is. It was with an Italian director. He's apparently at the moment in Sicily with, so this film, like, it's exciting that he's in it. The title, okay, let me tell you what it's about. It's based
on... But there are real actors in it,
actors. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's based on an illustrated gothic novel about three sisters living in isolation whose relationship is disrupted by the arrival of a lighthouse housekeeper's son. other plot details we don't know. They're kept under wrap. The lighthouse keeper's son is played by Josh O'Connor, that a lot of people might know from The Crown. It's people are thinking that Mick might play his father, but the cast is actually incredible. We've got Dakota Johnson and closer to home, Saoirse Ronan and Jesse Buckley are in this as well.
And Isabella Rossellini. Yeah. That's a hell of a cast.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
And apparently he's staying in Isabella Rossellini's father's house, in the apartment that Isabella Rossellini's father stayed in when he had an affair with Ingrid Bergman, her mother.
Wow.
So there you go, full circle moment.
Yeah, they were making a film called Stromboli.
That'd be a bit icky for her, I think
they were making a film called Stromboli, and I think the island is called Stromboli.
Stromboli.
So that's where it would
be. If you go to Sicily anytime soon and you're going down to, like, Stromboli, look out, there could be film crews there.
Yeah. But he's staying in an apartment where he had an affair with her mother.
No.
With Isabella Rossellini's
Rossellini's dad had an affair with her mother. Does that make sense?
What? You mean her parents?
Oh,
her parents. Sorry.
Okay, that sounds far more conventional there. It's good. I thought it was like, you know, it's this steamy stuff with Mick Jagger.
Anyway,
okay, Mum and Dad's flash. That's where Mick Jagger's staying. You are listening to the Moncrief Show and You Stop. We do have to take a break. After that, more movies and booze. Pleased to say the film historians in the listening audience know all about Mick Jagger's acting career. Jagger was in a movie as far back as the late 80s. I think it was called Jackknife. Jagger was in Flashback back in the 80s, a crap movie, so crap, it's why I can't remember it, says Paddy. Jagger was in a film called Performance in the 70s, and it was crap. Bit of a theme there.
We're going to South Africa now, and I actually haven't featured South Africa for a long time, so it's long overdue. This is the Brampton Shiraz, and again, brand new to the market. It's exclusive in Dunn's stores. I went to South Africa in the year 2000, and I always remember this lovely guy called Anders, and sadly he died last year, actually. He was only a young guy, but he was working in the trade. And on our last day, he arrived and he said, oh, look, he said, I want you to try this wine. It's one of the first Shiraz that we've grown in South Africa. And, you know, South Africa's ideal climate to make all the Rhone style wines, mm-hmm. right? And we were really surprised, you know, oh my God, they've only started growing Shiraz now because, you know, but since they started doing it about 26 years ago, Shiraz has really come into its own in South Africa. This is, again, what I'd say, a perfect barbecue wine. It's, you know, entry-level price point. What you have is the Shiraz grape, or Syrah, as it's known in the Northern Rhone. You've got a bit of tannin here. It's a modern kind of wine brand. And the fruit comes when you see wines of origin, coastal regions. It's interregional, basically. Mm. But, I mean, I think this has lots of nice berries and spices and basically, it does exactly what it says on the tin, right?
Yeah.
So if when the summer arrives this weekend, you're going to throw some steak or the burgers on the barbecue.
God, you're plugging that one today.
This is going to be a really good wine. So the Brampton Shiraz, very drinkable, quite juicy fruit. You know, tannin is soft. Sit and sip.
Yeah. In South Africa, do they have native grapes or was everything imported?
Well, the winelands were first planted around the 16th century, 1646 or something, as far as I remember. And it was a Dutch doctor, Jan van Riebeck, who brought the first vines to South Africa. And it's believed that he brought Chenin Blanc. You know, it's one of the most widely planted white grapes in South Africa, and it's been there a long, long time. And they've a lot of old vine Chenin Blanc. So the grapes are not native. They don't have any native grapes. But what they do have is an awful lot of really old vines that are planted in places like Swartland. And what's happening, actually, the big trend and the big movement in South Africa is that you've got all these young guys and they're going to the farmers and they're buying the grapes from them. And then they're making, you know, borrowing somebody's couvery and making the wine and, you know, making something really funky and sexy in a bottle and from really old vines. There's lots of sort of Rhone, like you'll get in the red varieties, you get old Carignan, you know, you get lots of older sort of grapes from Europe that are there. But Shiraz is relatively new. It's only there in the last.
I'm being surprised by
yeah,
that.
In about the last 25 years. But during the apartheid years, the gas thing about South Africa was that they used to make all their wines based on Northern European, methods. So they, in a warm Mediterranean climate, they were using white wine techniques from colder parts of Europe to make their wines. And then, you know, eventually they figured out, well, you know, we're not really doing this very well. And so since then, there was a revolution which really began from the 1990s onwards. And South African winemaking is now unbelievable. There are some amazing producers, and a lot of them are small, you know, family owned estates. And, you know, you don't see big brands from South Africa, you know. It's all sort of more handcrafted, small producers. I mean, there are brands, certainly, you know, but certainly on our market, most of the South African wines you find here are pretty good quality, and they're all kind of more of the high end stuff. We have some really stunning South African wines on the Irish market.
Is it all over South Africa they're making wines?
Stellenbosch, Franschhoek, all around the Cape area, really.
Yeah.
I mean, the vine is actually grown nearly in every country in Africa. You know, I mean, there was a wonderful book written, by the Platters, who they're these famous journalists. And basically, it was about what countries in Africa that the grape is grown in. And nearly every country in Africa will grow, but not commercially, unfortunately.
Not commercially, yeah.
So
well,
one of the best
potential
known,
is there, though.
The best known country for wine is South Africa.
Yeah.
And down in the Cape.
Yeah. Now, they're making, is it a drama they've made about the Madeleine McCann disappearance?
Yeah, so we've missed it. It happened on Wednesday,
apparently. Oh, wow.
So Channel 5 aired a 90-minute drama entitled Under Suspicion, Kate McCann. And it's basically about Madeleine McCann's disappearance, but it's not necessarily what they focus on isn't Madeleine McCann. Just from the title, you know, it's about Kate McCann, and it's about her interrogation. So it's all about the way Kate was treated. Now, Channel 5, this aired on Channel 5, and the McCanns aren't happy that this aired at all. They released a statement that raised concerns over the negative impact that programs like this have on their family as they continue to grieve Madeleine's disappearance. I can't believe it was 19 years ago.
Yeah.
And they said, and especially like the timing, they've released it in May as well, when they said May is always a bit harder on us because this is the time that it happened. They don't understand. They said, we fail to see how this program will help. Programs like this always have a negative impact on our family. Channel 5 have come out and they said that they did tell because the McCann family said that they had no involvement in this whatsoever. Channel 5 came out and said that we informed the McCann family of both the production and the transmission date. This film is grounded in source material, including official police documents, interview transcripts, court records, and publicly available accounts. The production team worked carefully to ensure accuracy, restraint, and fairness, particularly given the sensitivity of the subject matter. I don't know, when stories like this come out, you just go, how far have we gone into true crime? Do we not understand that this actually is impacting a family? And if, like, I could probably understand, you know, we have had true crime series come out, or even films where the people involved have gone, we want to tell our side of the story.
Yeah.
So I think if Kate McCann wanted to say, look, I wanted to show you what the interrogation was like, what it was like for our family, how that affected us, I can understand. But the family want nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
So I don't understand, like the McCanns, I sort of don't understand why this story needs to be told.
Yeah, but this was a dramatized version of this anyway. So it wasn't, so they probably didn't, they or did they invite them to be involved in the production
anyway? Well, it's funny,
but
the McCanns say that they didn't, but Channel 5 have said they didn't say we invited them to be a part of it. They said we informed them of the production and the transmission date. So how much they were going to be involved, I don't know. But I think when we watch stuff like this, we do have to think that these are real people.
Yeah.
And stuff like this has a real effect on them.
Yeah, we see, but that's the thing, though. Aren't we all a bit to blame as well at the same time because we're lapping this stuff up?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's strange how picky people get. You know, it's like, oh, I'm happy to watch this dramatization of this murder on Netflix and that becomes the most binge series of all. So I'm happy to watch this one. Oh, no, definitely not that one.
Yeah.
You can't be picky about those kinds of things at all. Yeah. I just think it's weird.
I think maybe there's what's a vast generalization, but if there's a bit of Americans killing each other, you know, we can view that as entertainment.
Yeah.
But if it's anywhere
it's close to home,
this continent.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll move on to our second movie. It is 500 Miles. Here's a clip.
Grandad.
I told you to stop, Colin.
Meet my mum's until we sort something out.
This is your decision, not mine.
Go on, Charlie.
What's going on, Finn? Where are we even going?
We just need to get to Grandad's. He'll know what to do.
About what?
Keeping us together.
I can't let you on without a responsible adult.
You're looking at us.
Well, you've enough cheek for a new art. You know that? Come on, get on.
Have you family over in Ireland?
In Dingle. My Grandad. Everything's been shit since they cut him up.
You can't keep blaming yourself, John.
Grandad, do you ever get lonely?
You know, now and then.
There you go. You can make up your own mind whether there were any Irish actors in that particular clip. Certainly the person who said shit rather than shite wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
So, bit like Flight of the Doves.
Bit like Flight of the Doves.
That's a Walter Macken book.
Yeah, I think. Where you've got, you know, two kids looking for a grandparent in Ireland, I suppose, but not escaping abuse in this story. They're running away from the fact that, you know, mom and dad played by Michael Sulca and Claire Dunne, might be breaking up. We know that at some point in the lives of this family, so you've got Finn and Charlie, played by Roman Griffin Davis of Jojo Rabbit fame. He's the kid from Jojo Rabbit who's all grown up. And you've got Dexter Salt Ansel from A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So they're the two brothers. We know that at some point in this family's life, things were perfect. And they all live in Sheffield because that's where the dad is from. But Claire Dunne's character, she's the mom of these two kids. She's from Ireland, and the granddad and the grandmother live in Dingle. And so one of the kids is obviously obsessed with, you know, spotting fungi every time that they're there. We know that they used to holiday there all the time and that they all adored one another. We also know that something bad happened, but we just don't know what it is. And I'm certainly not going to spoil it. But it gets to a point where granddad is no longer on the Christmas card list and mom is not answering any of his calls. The mom and dad are, you know, fighting, they're at each other's throats all the time. So Finn just takes it upon himself one morning to pack a bag for himself and his brother and to wake him up about 5 o'clock and say, "We're going to Ireland." Doesn't matter that it's 500 miles
How
away.
Old are these kids now?
So the kid is supposed to be early teens. I think is supposed to be about 15, maybe 16.
All right.
And then the other one is supposed to be about five or 6 years younger than him. So they take every mode of transportation except for airplane because they really don't have that much money to work with. They've got, like, you know, a box full of coins basically. So they get the train. Then they're on the ferry along the way. They encounter Maisie Williams, the type of character that only ever shows up in stories like this, the type of Irish person only ever shows up in stories like this. To be fair, Maisie Williams, another Game of Thrones alumni, she is a good sport here. She is quite good here, and she's got a perfect Irish accent, perfect Dublin accent.
Okay.
Bill Nighy is the granddad who they're trying to get to. We'll just give one thumbs up for Bill Nighy's Irish accent. But it's a good dramatic performance.
What's the maximum amount of thumbs he could have got?
Not two this time, anyway. But it's a good dramatic turn from an actor, I think, who is impossible to dislike. I think you'll love these characters. You will love and recognise that, you know, classic Irish coastal holiday. We've all had them, and I liked the time that I spent with this family. I think the kids here are very, very good. I think, you know, just the energy and the enthusiasm, especially from Charity and also from Bill Nighy, they have a good rapport there. You know, their chemistry, it feels lived in. You do buy them as a family. It is a bit soapy around the edges. It's unfortunate that when they get to Ireland, you know, a couple of them end up on horseback because, you know, Ireland.
That's the last mode of transport, isn't it?
That is unfortunate. And also, this story comes with a bit of I'll call it a narrative shift in the third act.
Okay.
There's a tragedy here. I don't want to say anything, and I'm not quite convinced that the film earns the thing that happens in the third act. I've been thinking about it ever since, but I'm not sure if it really fits. But look, you know what you're getting with this film. If the weather doesn't play ball this weekend, Gene, it's a perfect Sunday afternoon film.
Finn was also the name of the older child in Flight of the Doves.
Is it? Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
A texter says, so is it like Into the West? Somebody else wants to know. And is the Proclaimer song in it?
It's not, no. They might have, it might have come over the credits, which I probably missed, but
yeah.
Wasted opportunity. Too expensive, maybe.
Yeah, but it's not. But the thing is, like, have we, as Irish viewers, become desensitized to the Irishness of these depictions, and it doesn't bother us, maybe. Rather than going, this is completely ridiculous?
Maybe. I mean, I will applaud the effort that was made here, because, you know, you've got the great Claire Dunne in there. You've got, you know, the fact that they actually shot it here. Bill Nighy is technically one of us. They didn't actually shoot all of the Dingle scenes in Kerry.
Oh.
Yeah, they actually shot it in Wicklow. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
We were doing so well.
Right. I wish I hadn't said that. The Healy Razor have tabled the motion for the doll next week. That's our lot for today. Thanks to Gene Smolin, Serena Bellissimo, and Chris Wasser.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
The martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.